This week on The Droids, we're talking about Episode 3, Part 3 of Obi-Wan Kenobi, Darth Vader Returns. Oh, so much to say about this episode of Star Wars Obi-Wan Kenobi. All that and more on The Droids. Sam, that was quality. Yeah. That was quality. Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Sam has now done his Vader impression. Ryan and I will do ours later on in the show. Mm-hmm. And thrilled to be here with Ryan and Sam. We're down a Chris this week, but that probably means we'll talk a little less about 1/8 scale Millennium Falcons.
Chris has choked on his aspiration.
I have so much to say about that. So much to say about that. And we have so much to say about this episode.
We're cooking with gas now.
We really are. Everything is with this. Follow us, DroidsPod, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Jedi Fallen Order playthrough. There's going to be another one of those, Jedi Survivor, coming up in a couple years. Mm-hmm. Don't miss that. Again, we're going to talk about Celebration. I think we got to get a side pod at some point on all the Celebration news. Just too much going on, especially with the quick turnaround. Friday to Wednesday.
We're going to have to do a play-by-play of Tamora Morrison's depiction of Gimme the Beat Boy and Free My Soul.
Oh, boy.
We got to do it. It's live commentary.
That was one of the most crazy 10-minute interviews I've ever seen in my life.
So you're telling me I need to watch it now. I actually had not. I'd heard it was weird, but I didn't watch it.
I mean, like, at the risk, I don't want to sound insensitive using, like, a word that is in the DSM, but it's, like, it's manic. It's very, it's wild.
Well, what else would you expect? I can't even imagine him doing anything but a manic interview.
Yeah, and, like, he sings the song at the end as if we had all agreed upon it. I don't know. It's wild.
That's the only part I'll watch a bunch of coverage. We'll do some. Chris was kind of our primary.
We need him back.
So we need him for that episode for sure.
Yeah, I think Chris
he watched
just
it
had
all
it
real
on
time.
The background for like 4 days.
Well, he usually has it on in the background from years prior, every day of his life. You know, since on the 1999 one. There's some stream that he found, someone with a VHS recorder that he actually got a copy of, and he's playing it back.
He just has a loop of that and the Twilight Princess E3 reveal. So.
Point of clarification, Chris has that on in the foreground every day of his life.
Right, yeah. He's working in the background.
It's a very good point.
He's just getting by, doing what he needs to.
Well, we are in part three. And again, like I said, such a quick turnaround. It was actually kind of a nice surprise. I really thought they were like, we switched it to Friday. It'll be Friday to Friday.
Yeah.
Wednesday, I was like, this is great to have another episode so soon.
It just kills me to wait a week now.
Well, it does. And you know why, Sam? And I thought of you, and I was actually re-listening to the podcast that we did after episodes 1 and 2. I am now completely in your camp. This is a movie in 6 parts. It is not an episodic series, especially when, you know, all the things that I kind of set up is like, maybe they're going to go away from him being with Leia the whole time. Maybe, you know, they're going to have these be contained and satisfied. Yes, they're all part of a larger story. But the end of this past episode was just like, yep, that's a beat that should just continue on to the next scene. I don't want to wait a week. And it made me feel like this is not what I was hoping for in that respect. There's a lot of that I'm really enjoying.
Yeah.
But in terms of the respect of this not being a 6-part movie, it's now.
Right, that. Right. Yeah. So I just say since that was kind of where I was coming into this week, you know, that didn't jar me. That met with my expectations. And I have like a couple little critiques, but I mean, let's just get into it. I loved this episode.
Yeah, me too.
Like this episode ruled, I thought.
Here's what's great is that, you know, Ewan McGregor unimpeachably is considered the best performance in the prequels, right? And then we didn't have some Star Wars for a little while. And then the sequel trilogy came out where the acting overall is very good. You know, there's really no complaints there. There was with the prequel trilogy about like people feeling wooden or whatever. And Ewan McGregor seemed to come back being like, no, I'm taking the mantle back.
Yeah.
This dude's doing, he's doing the Lord's work over here. He's carrying the whole universe on his back.
Even from the start of the episode, with his hands and the anxiety felt through his hands as he was trying to meditate to connect with Qui-Gon, that, I mean, there's so many parts of his performance within this episode, but just starting it off on a level of like, yes, I feel that. I feel exactly emotionally where he is, even though I've, you know, none of us have been in that situation. He's reflecting that and
I mean,
portraying
I've,
that.
I've
so well.
Called out to Qui-Gon Jinn many times and not been answered.
Well, that's true.
So I've been in that position all the time.
He's busy. He's on set of an action movie basically every day of the year.
I'm in that position right now.
You're calling to him. Yeah, open. Open. Waiting. Well, so this episode, just high level, you know, let's think about where it was. We had them finishing off in the freighter. They end up on another planet where they're trying to evade stormtroopers. We learn a little bit more about, really, Ben Kenobi. We learn that Obi-Wan Kenobi had a brother. We can talk about that scene, but just like given the recap, there's that, they're on the planet, they're trying to evade, they find, they're looking for the help that was promised by Kumail's character, they fend off some stormtroopers, they deal with old Freck, is that Freck was his name, right?
Freck.
Yeah, Zach Braff.
Yeah, good old Zach Braff. A lot of people thought it was Seth Rogen, but it was Zach Braff.
And wait, was
voicing.
It really?
It was voicing of Zach Braff. I don't think he was in the costume. Maybe he was. Yeah. But, and then the stormtroopers followed by them kind of getting into the hidden parts of a town to then be found by the Inquisitors and Vader, and we all know where it goes from there. So within that, there's so much to love about this episode, but I think we all, just for that moment, the Leia and Ben in the back of Freck's vehicle before the stormtroopers arrive, and these little moments, these moments between the two of them, where we're learning more just about, I think, where Ben is at, where what he's willing to communicate, what he's willing to share with her, and how the two of them are relating, and how, what we're seeing, and Sam, you talked about it in our last episode, like, you know, this actress playing Leia, she's been spectacular. I think this was her best episode.
Like, I had some complaints about her running in the first episode, but I think they really hit a stride, the two of them. I think that it's working really well.
I think she's won me over. I will say, I think she's great.
Like, yeah.
She's great, but I mean, like, their relationship has won me over from being skeptical in the first two episodes of, why are we doing another Lone Wolf and Cub like we talked about? And now I'm kind of just past that. I'm just having enough fun with that.
Even before Freck's vehicle, what I thought was the most emotional part of the show so far was him asking her what it feels like when she turns the light on.
Oof.
Oh. You guys keep hitting on things that it's like, I'm like, we could do an episode on any of these topics. There's so much, like, this episode hit such a home run with, like, I think good lore expansion and, like, the good type of fan service where it's like, it's not, okay, there's a moment in the episode where Leia is like introducing them to Freck and she's like, say hello. And it's like, I pre-rolled my eyes because I was like, oh, this is the hello there that we're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't do that.
Right.
And like, that's the low fruit. That's the cheap fan service. That's the, like, the origin of where it's actually something you talked about. It's a very sweet moment, but it's something that actually bristled me in episode one, in the first episode of the series, where, like, the fact that Ewan's the one who, or that Obi-Wan's the one who's giving Luke the toy ships that we see him playing with in, like, as a teenager in A New Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Some people call it Star Wars. It kind of bristled me because I was like, oh, we needed an origin of, like, look, there's this artifact. It like scratches that itch of like, I recognize that thing.
Yeah, yeah. You know? It's like the laser ball and
yes, yeah. It's the laser ball. So this moment of like the obvious, oh, he's gonna say hello there, and he just says hello. I was like, oh my God, they're not going for the cheap fan service when we have the moments of like explaining, like, It's such a beautiful explanation of the Force that's such a non-explanation yet again.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I love that.
It was
that's
like a
what
classic,
I
kind of like, listen, I don't mind midichlorians, but it's like when people talk about the quote unquote like mystery being taken out of the Force, this was like the perfect kind mm-hmm. of like, it's like turning the light on.
Like it's that. Like, have you ever been scared of the dark? How do you feel when the light comes on? And I'm just like, oh my God, it's dark and light. It's the, like, this yeah. is so
it was
incredible.
Perfect. It was perfect.
It was an amazing piece of writing for something that's been around for 40 years and permeated all of our culture to find another way, even though we've had so many ways to describe the Force, to find another way that resonates, which is just amazing.
It's also the first time, so we've seen people cut themselves off from the Force before, as we know. Mm-hmm. We've seen Luke do that, right? But his was more of an act. What's that?
Brilliantly, in yeah, a very well written.
His was more of an act of defiance, right? Like, because he was like, he was choosing to do it. He didn't have to. And mm-hmm. Obi-Wan's was out of necessity, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not something he wanted to do. So the way that they depict it as without it, he feels lost and scared.
Yeah.
Was very powerful. That he was like, this is a thing that like I miss dearly. And like he's now reconnected with
it. If you think about what that line, yeah, Ryan, you're hitting on it. Like that line is emblematic of the fact that Obi-Wan feels like a child who's scared of the dark and been sitting in the dark for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
what a horrifying loneliness.
Is paid off when he says, like, I was taken as it, like, in this interesting way, it plays into the kind of, dare I say, like, it doesn't shy away from the sense that, like, Jedi may have a little bit of arrested development. Because they're mm-hmm. taken at a young age and shown this way of life, that when they're taken away from that way of life, which is not supposed to be the way it happens for them, right? But now that that is what's happened, he's kind of at a loss because he's not prepared for this in any way. And I think that that's a vulnerability that's very interesting for them to explore and was unexpected for me for them doing it.
Well, and they also, you know, this whole... By just trying to tackle this as a series at all, you know, like in concept, it's an obvious choice. You have, you know, an A-list star who's hugely popular, who's played one of the most iconic roles in the franchise. Hey, can we get him back? Right. That's the obvious like inspiration, but it's a difficult needle from like, if you're looking at it from like a branding perspective, you know, at the time they're trying to bring this together, the tide still hadn't fully turned on the prequels yet. You know, people liked Ewan, but the fan base was still kind of coming of age. And so I find it so interesting, like what they are bringing in from the prequels. And I love that reference. I love that this is just acknowledging, like, this is in the period where he's acknowledging, like, yeah, the Jedi practices were to take kids from their families at a young age. And he's questioning that. He's sad. He wishes sometimes he could remember his brother. I mean, like, you know, that's an incredible indictment.
Yeah.
You know, that's like kind of an incredible indictment of like this thing that he also misses.
I mean,
he's lost his family.
We know that, like, not that I don't think they're directly drawing this parallel, but they're certainly, I'm sure, aware of it, is that we know from the sequel trilogy that's the same thing the Empire practices with stormtroopers.
Right, right.
Yep. And it's so, again, I don't think that they're trying to draw a direct connection, but I think that there's similarities and that's not an accident.
Well, there's always parallels within Star Wars. And when you're talking about that scene of him even talking about remembering his mother and his parents and remembering, I think he said her shawl, it reminded me of Return of the Jedi. When Leia was asked by Luke, what do you remember of your mother? And she said, oh, you know, doesn't she say something like only glimpses? And it's interesting because now that you kind of interrogate that a little bit, obviously she wouldn't remember her mother at all because she was just a baby when she was taken from Padme. But it was an interesting scene that it felt somewhat similar. And once again, there's more of the rhyming within Star Wars, that there's almost these scenes that in some ways can feel familiar and be informative to multiple characters.
And
poetry, it rhymes.
And I didn't get the sense, I mean, time will tell on this, you know, they'll squeeze blood from a stone as much as they can, but it didn't get a sense that he was telling this story so that we could be like, oh, and then there will be an episode one day where we flash back and he goes mm-hmm. and he finds his brother and his parents and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
It just sounded like And if they stick to it, it's literally just like good, like character background.
I did think
like
after
that's
the,
as simple as it needed to be. He just like has
you're right,
this.
But I did think after the episode that at some point in the next 5 years there's going to be an Obi-Wan brother series or
right,
or,
but
or
it,
cameo.
If it
the big reveal.
Just like this, it operated exactly as it should have, you know, which
but,
is that
yeah,
we
yeah.
learned something about Obi-Wan Kenobi, and it was interesting. You know, his mother's shawl, his father's hands. It's like, this is like, it's not groundbreaking in terms of like writing, but it feels
groundbreaking in comparison to a lot of other things that we watch these days.
It
really feels much more in terms of building that character and doing it in these. That's one of the things that Star Wars has done really well for a long time. And JJ did this well in a lot of the things he's done. And I haven't given a lot of credit lately for many things, is to immediately give pathos and reason to care about some characters with little bit of action, little bit of story that can put me enough to feel for them. And I don't think that you're not getting that in a lot of blockbuster cinema or streaming lately.
I'm just making another connection with this idea, which is that, you know, Obi-Wan has the faintest memories that he thinks he has a brother. And he kind of laments that he, when he gets glimpses of him, that he can't really remember him. But of course, he then talks about how the Jedi become a surrogate family and a new family where he did have a brother who is also lost to him. Like
who's over there standing there in his vision, just staring at him.
Oh, that was great.
It's really, I mean, you know, I guess you can still be critical when Star Wars saga after 40 years is still kind of all about fathers and brothers, but like it's also, you know, it reinforces and strengthens like the things that I don't know, I'm really liking that parallel now and like finding the heartbreak and like the idea that he put so much in, like how did he view Anakin? Did he view Anakin as the lost brother at one point? Did he start to come to see him that way? You were my brother, Anakin. You were my younger brother that I didn't get to have a life with because I was force sensitive and have this other great life and to lose him and to be forced to fight him to what he thought was his death. Like
Sam, it's really tragic. Bring up again the emotional trauma of Obi-Wan and the failures of Obi-Wan and where it's honestly, you just imagine him breaking down at any moment. He's at now as a character.
Especially, you know, he's at now.
Well, but I'd say even where he's at now as a character, he's still showing some strength despite being in a weaker state. And like we can just talk about the weaker state he is when he faces Vader in this episode.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's times where I'm like, I almost want the full emotional breakdown. And I don't think a show like this is going to do that because, I mean, Ewan McGregor can pull it off, but I honestly thought, and we don't need to talk about the whole Vader thing right now, but I thought when they first converged that would have been part of like the overwhelming emotion for him, that he would have, and there's a lot of emotion in that scene, don't get me wrong. But I honestly kind of want to watch him, you know, scream with complete anguish. Yeah. And he does in some ways, and he does in Revenge of the Sith, but there's still some composure there. All that he's been through, I kind of want him to just lose it. I don't know.
Chris's point from last week about was like half proven, half not, where Vader's just pissed and like he's out to kill him. I was hoping this sounds so silly, but that they would talk more, you know?
Exactly what I was thinking the entire time.
Yeah, I was hoping there'd be a little more interaction. I still don't know if they're going to go in that direction or if it will be like, you know, Vader's evil and Obi-Wan. What I loved is that Obi-Wan is terrified. And you feel it. He's like running away.
Which is why I'm not downplaying the performance or the emotion we're seeing him in this episode. He's absolutely completely overwhelmed by the emotion. I'm just.
Yeah, no, I completely get you. Yeah.
I also think they might go there. We'll see. I mean, I don't know exactly what you're describing is like what you'd like to see, Mike. But I mean, I think they, you know, we're halfway through. You're not going to put you're gonna put your best stuff, you know, at the climax, right? So we're still a ways away from that.
I need that reminder. I need that reminder. Yeah.
He's so scared, and it's such an interesting reversal because they were so evenly matched. But you look at like what 10 years in darkness has done to him, and away from the Force, he knows he doesn't know if he can beat him again. He's also just terrified of what he's done. He's having to face his own his own kind of creation, you know. It's I thought that read really well. I want to, we need to devote some time to Vader. And I gotta, this is where I have one of my nitpicks. And I think it's like kind of across the board with Vader post the original trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
Which is that I think, when they've had James Earl Jones back, I don't know if it's James Earl Jones or someone else doing the voice for this series.
It's a little bit of a little bit of magic. You know how they did Peter Mayhew, where they did Peter Mayhew in The Force Awakens as having played Chewbacca when he was maybe in just the sitting down scenes in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Right.
I think there's a little bit of that with like James Earl Jones is credited for doing the voice. He might have done like a pass, but then there's some either technological marvels they're using to bring his voice back to sounding like it's 1977 or someone who can do it as well. Because I thought it sounded great. And Sam, you don't feel that way.
It sounded better than it did in Rogue One.
What happened in Rogue One?
I think it sounds So here's what I think. I think it sounds really good. I think it sounds good in terms of like the pitch and tone. I think that every appearance of Vader in the suit post the original trilogy, for whatever reason, I think it's like people remember the voice as being slow to speak, and it's like he didn't talk that slowly. It's like deepening the voice or like making the low like Vader sound, I feel like it's always slow. And I'm like, I go back to like the original trilogy, it's like he's often like speaking orders like quickly, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just felt like there were beats in this.
I want them alive.
Yeah, exactly. Like there's something like, and maybe it's meant to be a character, I don't know where the character is at this point, but there's something that's just like even more melodramatic than it was in the original, you know, by virtue of having him speak slowly. It sounded right, though. It sounded like Jones in 77.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a whole lot more to unpack about.
That's my complete and total full list of nitpicks with this episode. It's just that.
Look, we're part of the way through this. I'm going to get into my biggest nitpick with this, and I don't know that it is detrimental. It's more of a first reaction, and I think I say that a lot on the podcast. When I have my first reaction, I feel a certain way, and then as I consume it and go back, I feel differently. I think on first watch, I was like, oh, you know, I don't know that the presence of Vader is you know, reminding me the way I would think of Vader, and that's my own, where we all get in our own heads about what our imagination is of it. But then I think about the way they shot it, and they shot him incredibly well. It all is pulled off very well. What I don't feel was great, and this is kind of leads me to my take as Darth Vader is not a small screen character. And I say that with all of us having watched and grown up with either on VHS, mm-hmm. DVD, wherever you're watching Star Wars, you likely didn't watch it on the big screen for the first time unless you were born, you know, in 1968 or 70. But my thought on it was Darth Vader walking around a dirt pit with no real grandiosity to it and the lack of John Williams or a significant score that went with it as well had me feeling like I was missing something with Vader there. And I don't know, I might be the only one who feels that way.
I had an opposite reaction.
Okay. Well, that's good. I thought in it is I'm like the trappings of the way Darth Vader, the greatest villain in cinema, looks in a cinematic setting versus you know, a mine shaft or some dirt backyard in California. It just didn't feel right to me. Like him on Mustafar at the beginning, that felt right. Felt like that's a place where Darth Vader would be. it just didn't feel enough on the scale of what I would have expected from Darth Vader. And this is just a personal thing. I'm not saying that it's not good. I think that they did it well, and the fight is a good fight, and what's going on between the two of them is well played. And even what's happening in the town beforehand, I think Vader is trying to draw out the friend and the hero he knows by hurting as many people as possible, because he knows Obi-Wan can't resist. So initially, like, I was watching it, and I'm like, is there a purpose to this? Is this just another reason to have Vader look cool and menacing and villainous, or is there a purpose? And I watched it, and I'm like, there is a purpose to that. But then as we get into more of it, and a little bit of the odd, like, non-elusive Obi-Wan running from Vader in this gravel lot, it just didn't feel cinematic enough to me. And cinematic is a loaded word because, you know, again, that's personal perception.
Yeah, I'm all for like demystifying that guy.
Yeah.
So I find something compelling about seeing Darth Vader walk around in like a gravel pit. And I think that the dichotomy that you're speaking about, there's like a tension to it because it is different than we're used to seeing him. I think it works because it's like, he wants this guy so bad that he's going to places that like Darth Vader would normally not go. This is below his pay grade. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So he's like going, he's going to a gravel pit to chase a guy around, you know? Yeah. And so I find that interesting and not vulnerable, because it's like, I don't feel bad for him, but, it creates this interesting dichotomy and kind of like weird tension of like, what is this guy doing here when we're so used to seeing him in such a grandiose, like he was literally just in a lava cave or a lava castle on Mustafar. And you
make a good point. The story side of that makes sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, it's, but you're it's just more saying it doesn't of the feel right to you.
Yeah, it's more of the production side to it, where there's so many things that they're doing in the volume. There's so many things that they're trying to do that, like, again, just that setting that looked more like any other thing on Earth than I've seen in Star Wars. And I guess, fine, the forest and moon of Endor just looks like anything else on Earth.
Well, the volume is a problem. Period. Listen, it's amazing technology and stuff, and I understand that they're shooting during a pandemic, so they got to do the volume is a problem. It does not look real the way that people have been like lauding it for looking. It doesn't look like green screen, but it just looks artificial in a different way. So, and like, that's fine. That's like a choice, and like, you know, they're developing technology, but I think this leaning on the volume is an issue, but that's
I also
here
think like, you know, they I mean, you guys know, big fan of Batman here. They used it on the Batman. They used the same, like the volume technology. And I think that there's like, I think, first of all, I think you can see it where it was used there, but I also think that there is a difference whenever to Mike's point, when you're building, you know, when you're building full scale sets on a soundstage, and when you're still shooting, you know, a lot practically, when you're still shooting as much as you can on certain locations, and when you're using the volume to kind of like augment and enhance the environment as opposed to create the environment whole cloth, right? And so, and understandably, these Star Wars series, you know, they want to take us to different worlds, so there's going to be a lot more heavy lifting from the volume. And it's the same thing as when you see a movie where they use green screen to do background replacement versus when they shoot the whole thing in a green screen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the volume is kind of like the advancement of what the prequels were, you know?
Yeah.
In this weird way, like technologically, well,
but that's what's kind of interesting to me about it, is that like, to compare the final lightsaber battle of Revenge of the Sith to the next time that they then meet, it's not fair, because obviously it's not going to be on the same level. But there's also like that background of Mustafar in all the green screen that it did is, yes, you know, it's not real, but it still looks very good. And I feel like, you know, feels fitting for it. Honestly, you think about an episode of the Ahsoka series, of the Ahsoka episode of The Mandalorian, where they created all these dead trees in this big, vast land that is surrounding her. why couldn't they do something else so it doesn't just, like, I just thought, like,
well,
couldn't
there
been
thing.
Something else with this to make it look like we're on a planet from Star Wars?
Like, the technology isn't the problem. It's that, like, they can do anything with the volume, and what they choose to do is barren landscapes over and over and over again.
Yeah.
It's, like, really weird. And then, like, obviously, episode two of this series, they did, like, the city, which I think looked pretty good. But it seems like they have like four presets, you know, where it's like Neon City, Tatooine, dead forest,
a ship docking yard.
So I just think, I think it's in a world where, like, in the prequels, where it was like they have green screens so they could show us anything. And, like, even if the technology wasn't quite there, you got to give them points for effort. Like, we were seeing many different, like, you know, backgrounds and planets and stuff like that. This is like they have the technology, and I just don't feel like they're, like, stretching its wings too much. But you know what? They're still figuring it out.
Well, let's talk a little bit more of the heart of that actual interaction, since we spent so much time on quickly, Vader and Obi-Wan. But
what I wanted to say also about Vader and demystifying him is that we have, like, the Vader, the mythical Vader, like in Rogue One, you know, which is, like, fun and stuff. That is, like, just built to be, like, action figures playing.
Yeah.
And, like, it's effective. It's like, I hate to use the word, like, badass, because it's, like, so violent, but it's like made to be this moment where everybody's like, oh my god, that was crazy, like that kind of thing. This was, like, brutal in the way where I was like, this ain't fun. You know what I mean? And I thought that was good for them to do, because it's like, this is a bad guy, like, this is our villain. I understand that we have, you know, it's more conflicted because it's Anakin and stuff like that, and we know his past, but the things he was doing were, like, brutal.
I think what you're saying is right. I'm still trying to land on where I feel, because Ryan, I hear you entirely, that it's like, let's bring this guy down a peg, you know, this is how vile he is and was. But there is something where I'm like, boy, I like in the other movies that we didn't have to see this, because it's dark. He's really dark, and it's really upsetting. And look, I don't know yet whether I think it's for better or for worse, but it felt different.
Exactly,
for sure.
Sam. That's exactly the way. Like, that's what left me with an odd feeling at the end of watching the episode. Is I'm like, all right, I don't know where this is going, because I need to watch the last three episodes and what this represents about the character. Again, what are you using this for? Are you using this for the story between Anakin Skywalker, Vader, and Obi-Wan, or is this meant to be a scene that just brings back the iconic visuals and shows this brutal side that people have been clamoring for without story being served within it? So I'm trying to reserve judgment.
I think
they are serving story. There definitely is. But like I said, like, as I'm watching it the first time, and because we have been, as Ryan even just stated, we've seen Vader used in these other ways where it hasn't necessarily been in the service of story. And it is, this whole Obi-Wan Kenobi series is built on this, them coming together again. I'm just saying, I have reservations about how they're using Luke. I have reservations about how they're using Vader now. And I want to see where this goes, that I, as Ryan even mentioned before, please let them talk more. Please don't just have it be another lightsaber battle.
Well, here's my read on this. And this is my take on Vader in general, right? I'm not, like, I wasn't a kid who was, I understand that kids are, like, obsessed with Darth Vader. Like, he's very, like, I wasn't a kid like that. Like, he was the villain. So I was just, like, wasn't interested. That just, like, wasn't my thing. I'm saying that value neutral. He's just, like, he wasn't, like, a character who was, like, my favorite character. I think he's an incredibly effective villain, and I'm compelled by his story. But because of that, the things that I find interesting about Vader is when they do things like this, that the more we know about him in the grand arc of things, Anakin to Vader, I think that the deeper we know him, the more pitiful he is. So even in moments like this where he's being all like, where he's being brutal, he's being violent, all this stuff, it's like he's all sound and fury, and like he's pitiful. He's kind of pitiful. Like, it, we've talked about this in the past, where it's like he's always, you know, he's like a child who was like looking for like guidance, looked for it in the wrong place with the emperor, and then is kind of serving him the rest of his life until he, you know, turns at the end of Jedi. And like, I think it's clear as day that he's like a somewhat pathetic character. But I think that people get so wrapped up with how quote unquote powerful he is, which, mm-hmm. which of course he is. He's capable of doing like vast many things with the Force, you know, like, that are horrid and things like that. But it's like, he does these things, he wouldn't have to do these things to assert his power all the time if he was actually truly like not pathetic in his own mm-hmm. way. And mm-hmm. we know this because, and I'm saying pathetic almost sympathetically because like Anakin is such a sad character. But you know, the more they do these things, and maybe I'm bringing my own projection to it, the more they do these things, the more I'm like, look at this. Like, I know this sounds, it's just like when he's like killing villagers to like bring out Obi-Wan, it's effective because you're like, all right, that's a tactic. He knows that he's doing this, yeah. But it's also kind of like, look at this loser. Like he's doing this like just because he can. You know, like there's there's nothing to him other than like this rage now. And I actually find that compelling. I'm saying this in like an interesting way.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's an interesting approach to him. And maybe it's not the read they want us to have. I find it when they use him like an action figure, like in Rogue One, it's like, that's not that interesting to me. It's like, yeah, he's evil and he's badass and like whatever. And that's, you know, we get why people are afraid of him. But also, even in that, when I'm projecting this onto it, he's kind of just going through the motions. He's just kind of like, they sent him in, and he's like, yeah, I guess I could just kill everybody. Like, it's easy for me. You know, like that kind of thing. I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I'm compelled by it.
Ryan, I love your read. I think that there's like, I think it's the idea of like, you know, when someone that powerful attack someone that weak, it's really, really sad and shows their character, right?
Right.
And that it's not.
I don't think this is a man of great integrity.
But what I think is interesting is about, again, and I'm not trying to. I think I liked it. I just found it upsetting, which I think was the point. Yeah. I think it was shot to be upsetting. I don't think it was shot to be like, look
especially
at his power.
When he
I think it
snaps that
was,
dude's neck. That's like a lot.
The child. He comes out yelling "father," and then he snaps the neck.
Yeah,
I thought that was perhaps overkill, but I don't like to be like squeamish about stuff. It's like, hey, it's film. You can make what your art you want. What I think is kind of interesting is like I do think he was shown as being, and he was perceived as being so powerful in the original trilogy because the people he was killing then were like high ranking officers, and not only could he do it without, you know, he could do it with impunity, but he also like he was powerful enough to take down the powerful, and that's some, you know, that was how they showed his power. And it's like, man, imagine if you had to face him, how hard, you know, how dangerous and scary that would be. And in this, yeah, you're right, it's petulant, right? He's throwing a tantrum and he's breaking everything around him because he knows it'll draw out what he really wants. And he's just got such fury and hatred for Obi-Wan. It's interesting.
Sam, correct me if I'm wrong. He only force chokes the officer up to the point. He doesn't kill him early on in A New Hope, right?
Correct.
He releases him and he survives. We've never seen in the original trilogy. In Empire, oh yeah, he does kill the
he
officers.
He just starts killing
Then officers.
They also start playing it as a joke.
Yeah.
They start playing it as like it's a comedy beat where like another officer, and again,
you
remember, they're space Nazis, so it's funny
none of us
dying.
Felt bad because they were space Nazis. And it was kind of like he was a villain in the sense of he would hurt those who were trying to attack him and he would hurt the other villains around him, but he was never hurting innocents until we got to the prequels where he then slaughtered the men and the women of the Sand People.
But even in episode 4 when he's like, you know, when he starts choking officers, like before that, like what prompts him is that they're like, you weirdo loser. Like you, like right. You're right. So weird and you're like the emperor's pet. And like, what is this? And it's like, I just think it's an interesting angle too.
It's
a it's an angle that's there. I don't know if they like.
I don't think
it's what they were going for, but it's certainly an angle that's there, and it's the one that I find the most interesting.
I do. I would. No, Ryan, I'm with you, and it's only really been impressed upon me in kind of my current age of watching Star Wars. You know, maybe in the last, I don't know, 5 years, 10 years that I've been watching these movies, have I started like noticing that there is that weirdness of like in Star Wars, in A New Hope, like Vader is not, he's not the second in command to the Emperor. He's mm-hmm. like an oddity. He's like you say, he's like a pet or like a weird, like Frankenstein's monster, you know, mm-hmm. as opposed to in Empire and in Return of the Jedi, he feels very much like he is second in command of the entire Galactic Empire. And maybe that's not quite accurate. Like, I don't know the hierarchy, but that's how it feels.
Because in episode 4, they're like, we've all but dissolved the Senate. And then by episode 5, it's like the Empire is like no longer even resembles like what the Republic was.
Mm-hmm.
So he would be higher up because the Emperor is like, yeah, like we're turning into this like weird cult now.
right and someday I will have returned
I don't know if this matters to either of you, but like I do think there's a point where you keep bringing him back, you keep adding some of these things, you keep adding these killings and this violence, and at what point do you make it difficult for us all to believe the redemption at the end of Return of the Jedi?
Well,
like I've struggled for a long time that any character who said they killed the women and children like that in the prequels, let alone that Padme is just like, all right, sure, let's still have a baby, that then they also allow that character to be redeemed. Like, I just think there's a point where it's like redemption isn't possible for certain villainy.
I felt that Mike, I think it's like I think it's kind of an eternal problem with Vader, because like, I think that they gave you enough in the original trilogy that the redemption arc was like believable and viable, but like I honestly think it goes back to what George did in the prequels, that it's like I think I just have to take the story as given a little bit on this, because I genuinely I'm like, if you're asking me to believe that like the idea that he reconnects with his own son and kills the Emperor is enough to make up for the fact that he like murdered like by his own hand like a dozen kids who were like acolytes of the Jedi, it's like, no, that doesn't, you can't, that doesn't matter.
Well,
like that,
I guess,
doesn't
the
matter.
The question is then the emotional,
but
we have to
works.
Ask ourselves as viewers, is like the emotional payoff in Return of the Jedi is that Luke leads him to have a change of heart and they connect at the end of Return of the Jedi. Does that mean that overall he is like redeemed in the whole world? Like
the force ghost tells you that though, right? That's the thing. If he didn't come back as a force spirit in his, you know, form as it before when he's Anakin as Hayden Christensen the original movie, then it would be like, okay, yeah, his son forgave him, his son helped him, but the force kind of deemed it, yeah, he's bad, he did enough to absolve himself.
Here's what I think. I think the emotional arc there, Ryan, so I think the emotional arc still holds and works for as it pertains to Luke's victory. Like Luke won, and that is cathartic for us because he did get his father to change late in life. If you take the viewpoint, which, you know, I think George Lucas kind of said as he created the prequels, where he's like, well, it's always been a story about Anakin's rise, fall, and redemption or whatever. If you look at it as Anakin's arc, then I'm like, I don't think it works. I don't think the idea of like, I don't think if when you're 20 or 25, if you kill a dozen kids, and before that you like massacred a family of people because they were, you know, a brutal tribe, you know, I don't think that arc doesn't work. But that's not the arc I'm watching when I watch the original trilogy. I'm watching Luke's arc.
Same.
So
yeah,
like, I think that, like, you know what I mean? I think it's like, well, who are we framing it as, like, does Anakin's redemption make us like have our cathartic moment? I say no. I think it's Luke's reaching his father that does it.
Also, I guess, and I understand that, like, this is a more nuanced interpretation of it than George Lucas was presenting. George Lucas was presenting an archetypal, like, redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, it was unquestionably at the end that Anakin is supposed to be redeemed. You know, stories change as we move forward. The world of Star Wars has grown. Our world is, as people have grown. So the idea of whether he is deserving of redemption or not is like not. I could kind of definitively be like, no, like in the world, no, like it's like he wouldn't be absolved. He wouldn't be like. You know, it, like, whatever, he could have this personal victory where, like, at the end of his life, he was like, I know what I did was wrong, you know, and like, that's his own thing. But that, and his son could be like, and, you know, I helped you come to that realization. So, like, you know, that's good. But like, in the world of everything, it's like, yeah, man, but like, you're still a heinous monster. Like, so, you know, it's not like he's going to be remembered in the world of Star Wars where they'll be like, you know, the terrible Lord Vader turned into Anakin Skywalker at the end. And we all thought it was cool. Like in the history of Star Wars, he was still like Darth Vader. You know, no one even knows that he had a change of heart at the end. So.
Right, right.
No, like, that's totally fair.
I guess I guess what's significant in that story, right, if we're going to debate whether like redemption is deserved or not, which I think pretty definitively in this case is. Not is that it's the valuable thing that he's showing is that like changes of heart are possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like, and I get this is a reframing like based on new information,
but, well, that's but that's what I yeah, that's what I'm kind of getting at. I know I'm taking this away from episode 3 of this series, but it's how much more can you play with a character before you start to, you know, impacted in ways that, you know, were never intended originally. Anyway.
Yeah, but like, I mean, he blew up an entire planet full of people. That it's up to us now. Now that we see it, we're not okay with it. You know what I mean?
Like, well, I mean, like, I always kind of thought that was the Moff, and he just kind of had to be like alongside him and say, sure. I don't know. No, I'm kidding. I do want to talk about like
the system,
the dialogue that we do have between them. Which really is the kind of biggest moment. I mean, there's two where him saying, look at what you've become, or what, you know, what is it? Is it specifically, what have you become? I am what you made me. Is that what the response was? Mm-hmm. And that in itself is just sort of, again, one more dagger in the back of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, how many times can this guy just be twisted with the knife to sit through that? And that was still intriguing of I am what you made me when you think about the layers of everything going on and still where the psyche is of Anakin.
Yeah.
Like you
take responsibility for yourself, bro.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He never will. Well, but not until the end of Return of the Jedi.
No, he's a child. It's like, you know, it's like he's his. Yeah, I don't know. For some reason, I find it more compelling to be like he's like this. He's petulant. That was a great word for it, Sam. Like it's and the way Obi-Wan says, like, what have you become? He's not saying like, look at you, like, behold this like majestic monster. He's just like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are you doing? This is crazy.
Which is why I wanted more for that too.
I apologize, that emotional breakdown. I would love them just talking.
I think we're going to get it. I think that there's probably before. I think we're going to get, first of all, I think we are going to get more lightsabers. But I think before we get more lightsabers, I'm thinking there's got to be a point where Obi-Wan is captured, you know, and there's like the Ryan, you said it.
I'm telling you, episode 5 should just be an interrogation the entire time.
Oh my god. Yeah, right. It would rule so hard if they. And you know, like, I do think that scene of like how they introduced Vader, I mean, I think Deborah Chow has the stones to do it, and like she's clearly not afraid to like push into some interesting, like I think watching this, it's clear that she has no Vader is a villain to her in this, mm-hmm. in the context of the series, and she's not afraid to show it that way. And she's, I don't want to deprive her of like the benefit of like, I think it is nuanced what she's doing, and I think she's presenting it in an interesting and nuanced way, but like she's not adding nuance to like, well, there's a Thanos viewing of this where from his perspective, he's right. It's like, no, from any perspective, he's a lowlife right now, you know?
Yeah.
He's
and it's thug. Like, also they kind of have to make him a villain because it's like, we know he won't
change. We know he doesn't, it undermines it if he has some kind of change here.
Well, and then some cool visual rhyming too with to Return of the Jedi in the throne room when Obi-Wan's like hiding from him to Luke, like, you know, hiding from him while he's like monologuing.
Yeah, totally. But yeah. I do think, there are some things that do need to happen, because there's a couple of call outs from the original trilogy. The call out of the line of, you know, when I left you, I was but the learner. Now I am the master. Mm-hmm. That can't be referencing this fight, this being the last thing between them. Mm-hmm. So the next battle between them likely needs to have Obi-Wan defeat him again, assert mm-hmm. again that he is still the master. Because in this fight, clearly, you know, Darth Vader is the master. But then separately, there's the Return of the Jedi line where Obi-Wan once thought as you did when Luke said that he saw light in Vader. I think there's going to be another moment where Obi-Wan calls out that he can still feel the light within him. Even if there's not action that is with that in this series, there's something to that still needing to be a part of it, that he can give to him the opportunity to still take the path of the light, even everything that he's done so far to this point, and that Obi-Wan could offer that to him. And so those two things combined to me would make sense in episode 6 or in the way this series comes together, so that then that still fits into that larger story that we find in original trilogy.
Yeah.
I'd love it.
I'm stoked. I thought the first two episodes I thought were very good. This one was like awesome. I thought it was just great.
Yeah. I thought episode 2 had like such a great payoff, but was only fine. I thought the first episode was really strong.
Episode 1 had me like, but like jumping off the couch at the end of it. When it finished, I was just like, yes.
But this one opening with like him like attempting to meditate, and then like that whole conversation with Leia, I just thought the whole thing was like thematically dynamite. Yeah.
Yep. Do either of you? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Sam.
I think now is as good a time as any. Just don't know if the listeners could tell I'm back in New York. Not sure if you can hear the tractor trailer outside my bedroom window that comes this time every night.
I do want to
deliver the milk.
Everything is. This is. I'm glad I'm not trying to sleep.
We saw Obi-Wan be outmatched and be woefully unprepared for this lightsaber duel with Darth Vader. Anyone thinking we're going to get a nice like a sports training montage? Maybe Qui-Gon as a Force ghost helping him train to get back in shape for his next battle.
Anyone? Well, that'd be fun.
Me, I'm not literally thinking that would happen. I just more so I'm thinking
some Rey on Octo chopping some rocks.
Yeah, a little bit of that, or just, you know, maybe a little bit of a Dagobah training scene.
I'm hoping it's more of a like he taps into the Force in a big way.
I think Qui-Gon is finally going to speak to him during the next battle, and I think he's going to reassure him, and he's going to fully, yeah, like you say, Ryan, tap into the Force finally. Fully. Oh, here we go, guys. Just let me pull out of the station here. This is my
dispatch,
bedroom.
We're
Wait, man. Is Freck there? You we got Freck taking through. You somewhere?
Guys, I loved Freck. I thought Freck was such a funny such a Star Wars character. I was like, this is like, this feels like the next, like, it doesn't quite feel like a George Lucas character, dude, but it was like an evolution of that in a, the, such a great way.
The way that they tapped into, and I don't think this was an accident, the way that they tapped into the idea of like hopping into like a Lyft or an Uber and talking to the driver and you're like, they seem nice. And then they broke out like, how about Donald Trump, huh? And you're right. Like, oh God. It literally like nailed that feeling of like you talking to someone and being like, they seem like a nice person. And then they reveal that they like love Trump.
It was and you're like, so funny. And it's intercut with, you know, it's intercut with some of those like real heartbeat moments of the show, like where, you know, he reveals he had a brother. I thought the moment when Leia asks, like, so you knew my mother, are you my real dad? And he's like, I wish I was. It's like, oh, it cuts me deep.
It was great.
We have not talked enough about what I thought was a perfect casting for an Imperial officer, the actress from Game of Thrones, who it's Indira Varma, who plays Tala in this episode. Mm-hmm. I love that bait and switch because she was an Imperial officer to a T to me. Like I just thought that was perfection. And then for her to be the one who's actually, no, she's there to help them, was such a wonderful turn. Cause I just, when we saw that in the trailer, I was like, ooh, can't wait to see her be evil. And here she is the opposite of that. And
also,
I really liked
a fun Clone Wars reference. Quinlan Vos. So he goes, Quinlan was here.
Yeah.
Such a great, these are some, I love the, like, I mean, it's the Underground Railroad, like carvings in the wall, like secret passage to, you know, for Jedi and Force sensitive people. The idea that they're hunting down Force sensitive people for, you know, I mean, I think we kind of suspect some of the reasons, but like they don't reveal why.
Yeah.
Well, we should acknowledge just quickly, that Moses Ingram has been the victim of a lot of harassment and racism and misogyny on the internet.
I'm glad you brought it up.
I'm very, anyone who would harass her, I hope would not be a listener of this show. If for some reason you are and you've wandered in and you're someone who harasses
please wander
her
out.
Or supports harassing her, stop listening now, go away. And to all the people who are out there harassing her and thinking it's okay to do that, you suck. You suck as a person. You're a bad person.
It's true.
Look inward. You're bad.
It's insane. It's insane the knots people will twist themselves into to say the vilest, most hateful things, and then what they point to as, I don't know, their justification, because it's like so many vitriolic racists are afraid to just own that they're racists, because it's like the idea of like the idea that these people are like claiming it's related to the writing of the character on the show.
They need to use racial slurs because they don't think the writing's good.
She's just poorly written. You got one episode and she's poorly written.
I hate to laugh, but it's like, what, like, listen to yourself, you know? And like you said, Ryan, though, more importantly, is like, yeah, look inward. You're like what we said about Vader, you know, it's petulant, it's childish, and it's sad. It's so sad and impotent to like take out your own rage on, you know, somebody who's A, doing their job, and B, doing it well. I thought she was great in this episode.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Not that needs to be a reason. It's not okay if she were horrible in the series.
Yeah, she's,
you know,
not
what I mean?
she's not horrible,
but she's not.
Even if she was, it like wouldn't matter in this context, you know?
Right.
Yeah, but
right.
You know, it's interesting. I do find it, and I'm glad that we're seeing Star Wars publicly make statements now. They didn't do that for John Boyega. They didn't have anybody else coming out and defending John Boyega when, you know, after the first trailer, it was just a sea of racists.
Or as I recall, Kelly Marie Tran when she was chased off of social media.
No, they haven't said anything.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see that they're doing that now. It is a little bit late, but thankfully they did that, and they also had Ewan McGregor come out with a statement. Maybe McGregor on his own said, hey, I want to say something also. But it just felt like this, I don't want to give too much power to like brands, but brands trying to make statements can actually start to mean something when they haven't decided to ever take a position before. It can make it very clear that that kind of, you know, behavior and reaction is not going to be something that it's welcomed within this entertainment going forward.
It's like, obviously I think that Disney doing something is better than Disney doing nothing. I think it is very late for them to be, you know, getting into this, getting into this defending people thing that, which obviously they should have been doing from the beginning. But as statements go, I supported that Ewan McGregor like definitively said, if you're like this, you're no Star Wars fan. You know, like, not that, like, listen, in the world of like hatred and racism, Star Wars fandom is not like high on the list of like things that matter, you know, but like, if that's what they're talking about, you know, it's like, for a company that seemingly has not engaged in this because they're afraid how it'll affect their bottom line. The fact that he said something so definitive, I thought was a step in the right direction. You know, as people who listen, we have no financial stake. We pay to do this show.
Speak for yourself.
If you think it's okay, if you think it's okay for people to do that to other people or say these things or think these things, like
Ryan, Chris gave me a 6-figure signing bonus.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, listen, then I'm not afraid of losing your signing bonus. Don't listen to our show if you do that.
Yeah, I agree.
You just like, I wish Disney would say, you know what, now you can't have nice things, and wouldn't show the rest of Obi-Wan. I'd be disappointed because I want to see the rest of the show, but I'd be like, you know what, respect. I'll get over that in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you know what? You know what we didn't have before? An Obi-Wan show. So you know how I know I'll be okay?
Because 2 weeks ago, I was fine.
Yeah.
Ryan, speaking of brand statements, if they did something like that to say, we are going to forego some of the income we would have based on having this series go out. Now, that would be taking a stand. That would be a position. That would be something that would be meaningful. That'd be
the funniest thing in the world. It'd be the funniest thing if they were like, if literally Star Wars said, now we can't have, this is why we can't have nice things. Obi-Wan Kenobi, no more.
Well, I think anything else we missed in this episode, we talked about a lot.
Last thing I'll say, what's her character's name? Reva's theme is baller. It's like really, really good, like Vader, like it's a great villain theme. It's really, I like it a lot. And we got a lot of it in this episode.
Reva looking at the Jedi Order symbol on the wall. It's never been more clear that she is a former Padawan who, I honestly think she's going to blame Obi-Wan, and her hunt for Obi-Wan is partially for the favor of Lord Vader, but more so in feeling like he is the one to blame for her lot in life and all the friends and people that she lost and why she is now this person.
Hey, I mean, I didn't think of this until just now. We could learn he could have been the one who separated her from her family.
Ooh. I think that would be harder for us all to take in, though. You know,
I mean, I'm not saying I want it, but that would be interesting.
That would be a good Chekhov's gun, though. With them. And how about that chair everybody wants to sit in, huh? It's spiky, matte black. Everybody's looking at it. They want to sit in it, but they can't. Oh, yeah.
I don't even know where you're going with that.
Ryan. There was no, I'm not going anywhere. There's the Inquisitors are like, that's my chair. And the other one's like, that's my chair. And no one can sit in it. Yeah.
All right. I gotcha.
There's no joke here.
Well, we are beyond excited for more of this to come. I mean, like, honestly, so much fun to talk about an episode like this that has so much to carry with it. And maybe, again, a little bit of me just being a little gun shy from a couple of things with Book of Boba Fett, with Luke coming in and Mandalorian. Like, how are you using this iconic character? And that being said, this has been an incredible 3 episodes. The next 3 weeks, I'm going to rewatch each episode 2 or 3 times week.
That's where I'm at too.
I've already watched last night's episode or yesterday's episode twice because I just had to experience it again to be like, okay, was I just affected by what I wanted or what I expected? And yeah, you know what? It did change my opinion a bit by watching it again a second time. It's, I love the first watch and I love the second watch to just really consume all the things I couldn't capture and really recognize the first time through.
I finished it about 30 minutes before we started recording, so I didn't get the second viewing in, but boy, I came in, I'm energized.
Yeah, it's great. Stoked.
Well, that is going to do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. We'll have Chris back to talk Celebration, figure out if I'm getting more of my signing bonus from him next time he's around, and that will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw?
Obi?
I want Jar Jar to show.
Well, I guess JJ wrote him as dead, but later on.
That would be, if that's like the big reveal at the end of an episode is Jar Jar, I'll be so stoked.